Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Deb Culbert. Deb has 25 years of experience in leadership development, organizational effectiveness, and management training. She was an HR director with a Fortune 500 company prior to founding People First Productivity Solutions. Deb's also an ICF certified executive coach, licensed practitioner in numerous assessment tools, and a certified master of the Leadership Challenge. In addition, she's also a published author, and her research and methodologies have been published globally in academic journals. Deb and I discuss soft skills, the importance of humility in learning to be a better leader, and what productivity actually means to individuals and businesses. Hey, Deb, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, Alex. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, I'm even more delighted to have you here because you have got an amazing background in leadership development and organizational effectiveness and lots of other things to do with how we get the best out of our people. But rather than me sort of telling everyone about your background, it'd be great just to hear in your own words what your journey has been and what you're doing now.
Yeah, well, I'll start with the more recent and then I'll do a little bit of backstory for you. I wouldn't normally, but this emphasis on people potential and on performance and endurance kind of made me think about a few extra things that might be relevant. But the short version of current is that I am the founder of People First Productivity Solutions, where we do deliver leadership development and management training, team effectiveness types of resources for our clients. And this past year, we also launched People First Leadership Academy, which is an online and live instructor blend of courses that people can access on all of those topics. Been in business for myself for going on 17 years now. And before that, I was a corporate director with a Fortune 500 company. And prior to that, I was in sales and training and oversaw operations. So I've had a mixed bag of all kinds of experiences. I think one of the things that given me all those opportunities is that I really, really value productivity. It's kind of a funny thing to value, but I think it comes naturally to me. My name, Deborah, in Hebrew means the bee. And I sort of like to think about myself as a bee who's buzzing around all the time, very busy, but also productive, not buzzing just for the sake of making noise. I like to get things done, and I like to get things done well the first time whenever possible. So what I enjoy the big challenges, the things that people say you can't, because all my life I've been sort of driven by proving that yes, I can. I started out life no stranger to adversity, some health hurdles and things that are probably not necessary to go deep into, but people can almost certainly relate to. But I heard a lot of you can'ts throughout my early life, and I decided early on, thank goodness that I had people around me who supported this, the notion of who says I can't, right? It's only true. It's only valid if I say I can't. And I decide and said to say I can. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, it's really interesting hearing you talk because I quite similarly, I'm absolutely obsessed with productivity. As everyone listening knows, I balanced my career in medicine and trauma orthopedic surgery and building sort of businesses alongside my training and running companies off my phone between operations and all sorts of crazy stuff. So I sort of, even without really knowing what productivity was, I sort of was being quite productive on a daily basis with lots of different time management solutions and focus areas. But for you, what does productivity actually mean? Because if you search on YouTube, if you go across any podcast, there are lots and lots of people and lots of books talking about productivity and being productive. But what do you think it is at its core?
I think it is the intersection of efficiency and effectiveness. Efficiency meaning getting things done quickly, effectiveness, meaning getting things done well and getting the right things done to make the difference that you want to make or to make the impact that you want to have. So some people default to one side. They're getting lots of stuff done very quickly, but maybe the quality's not there or maybe it's not the right stuff. Others are intensely focused on a pursuit, their priority, but they don't move the needle. They might be, for whatever reason, so deeply steeped in it that they're not having the impact they really want to have.
And when we talk about sort of being productive, I always think of it, you know, in similar terms, which is how can I really focus on the key things that I want to get done, whether it's in work or in business as a whole and in my personal life. And then I look at how I can do that in the least amount of steps possible or the least amount of time possible. What are some of the things that you and your company do when you apply productivity specifically to that kind of business domain where you're looking at corporate structures and how people are productive in work?
Yeah. You know, so much of it is very personal. There are systems. And of course, you must be attentive to the systems, the processes, the technology. All of that is important. That's not really where we specialize, though, because the barriers to being productive are more often personal. It is the unwillingness to try something new for fear of failing. It might be the perfection paradigm and helping people to get used to the idea of good enough is okay in a lot of things. Productivity has a lot to do with trust. We're going to have a lot of rework and we're going to be going around in circles. We'll have way too many meetings with way too many people, for example, if we don't just trust each other and unleash the potential that comes with trust and with empowering people to do things. So the outcome, productivity, in my opinion, is largely based on putting people first, hence the business name, People First Productivity Solutions. You've got to be thinking about the needs of individuals, your own and others, in order to get those kinds of results.
And just as a sort of a bit of a meta behind the scenes look at our podcast, I always try and be efficient and productive and optimize everything that we do here. And one of the things that I do is always ask our guests to send in, you know, really three topics and three focus points around their expertise and their area of interest that we can really focus on to talk about so that we get the most out of that time and we really make sure it's relevant to the audience. And I think your three are probably my favorite to date, just because of the some of the words I don't think I've ever used them in my day-to-day speech. My mum is actually a now retired English teacher, so I got drilled in lots and lots of different old school English words when I was younger. So, the first one that we started off with was mentality, which, I'm sure, people listening to the podcast may never have come across. But what does that mean in terms of what you do in productivity?
Yeah, so entelechy, it is not a widely used word, although it is a true word. You can look it up in the dictionary, E-N-T-E-L-E-C-H-Y, entelechy. And it comes from a Greek origin. It means to unleash potential. So potential is the possibility, the not the current reality, but what's possible. And entelechy is what you do to bring that potential, that possibility into reality. And I don't think we spend nearly enough time focusing on this, not in ourselves. We often think about more our limitations, what I can't do, as opposed to ways to discover and pursue things that, sure, you can't do them today, but that doesn't mean you can never do them. And in businesses, I think there are also restraints. A common HR model, for example, is the 9-box model, where you box people in, you chart them by their performance level. Is it high performance, low performance, medium performance? And then the audacity of this group of people that sit around a table and then they say, you are high potential, low potential, medium potential. I really take umbrage at that because nobody else can judge, even by your actions, what your real potential is. Only you can determine that. And people's potential, well, it has a lot to do with mindset and with current circumstances. When people have low potential in organizations, I start by looking at the organization. What is it that's suppressing potential? So entelechy is just an entirely different way of looking at business, looking at outcomes, results, productivity. What is the potential and how do we unleash it?
And for you, where do you think that starts? Is that in the hiring process when you're looking at some of the attributes and the skill sets that you're hiring people into roles for? Do you think it's the company culture? How deep do you sort of get into how people look at that element of potential?
Yeah, I think it starts in the hiring process by looking for people with more of a growth mindset, people who are themselves interested in learning and growing, and they see within themselves the desire and the opportunities to do that. They haven't already stopped with what they know. And so, yes, you bring in people who have that mindset, but the company culture needs to reinforce it. It can't be that the learning opportunities are only set aside for the people who have high potential. I understand that's an efficient way to allocate your development dollars, but it's a real buzzkill for the majority of the organization, because you have, what, 10% who you label hypo, high potential. That means you got a lot of popo, people who are, they're done, right? They're overlooked. And so they're frankly pissed off, and they're not going to give you their full anything, let alone their potential. So it's got to be from the moment someone's hired, in that process of hiring, all the way through their career. And managers have to be trained to know how to motivate and empower people, and how to see potential, and how to, if they don't see it, how to help people look for it and demonstrate it within themselves.
You're listening to the Human Performance Podcast by Verti. If you're enjoying this episode, why not join our newsletter? When you sign up, you'll receive a copy of Level Up straight to your inbox every Thursday with the latest tips, tricks, and news about all things human performance. Head over to verti.com/newsletter to sign up. That's verti.com/newsletter. You can find this in the show notes. Anyway, back to the episode.
And just before we started recording, we were talking about the importance of soft skills, which is obviously one of my, huge passions. I left medicine to start a company that really sort of helps people to learn soft skills. But a lot of people out there who, maybe they haven't read Carol Dweck's book, and they feel that things like emotional intelligence or soft skills are fixed. How do you go about sort of changing some of those mindsets in a corporate setting and saying, hey, actually things like potential, productivity, and how to bring the best out of people can actually be coached, can be trained into managers, into leaders? And how do you take sort of organizations on that behavioral change journey?
Yeah, well, I don't always. There has to be a willingness somewhere for things to change. I have often been hired, or people have attempted to hire me, as the intervention. We have a terrible culture here, and we, people work 60 hours and they're all resentful, and it's too bad. That's just how things are, but we need people to be happier. Well, okay, hard stop. What are you willing to change in the corporate culture, in senior leadership, in appreciation of employees' efforts? You're measuring just the hours and you're saying too bad. That's a warning sign to me. So I don't think that every organization is ready for change, depending on how they're entering into the conversation. And I don't take those assignments. I used to try, but it was just maddening, uphill climb. But when you have a leader or a couple of leaders at the top who are willing to embrace change, willing to look at themselves and their own behaviors and the example that they set, when they're willing to make those changes, when things have either gotten bad enough or they have somewhere along the way opened their mind up enough to see that things could be different, that's where the opportunity is. And it has to be change at all levels. It can't just be fix the people over there.
And I guess, if we focus back on that kind of corporate setting, and we think about, what people's interpretation of productivity might be at, just as a surface level, you might have a CEO or a leader who's under pressure from their board, or it might be a sales team leader who needs to hit quota. And people are looking at things like, how do you do more in less time? And they're looking at their team and they're thinking, this person takes longer than everybody else, or, this person isn't getting their sales information into our CRM in a way that's concise, in a way that can be shared. at that kind of level and that sort of practical level across different departments, where do you even begin when you kind of go in to sort of analyze some of these sort of productivity changes?
Yeah, as a coach, this is something that you probably do a lot too. I believe fundamentally that people do the things they do, they make the choices they make, because they think with what they have to work with that that is the right thing to do. And so helping them to see things differently is the only way you get them to change their behaviors. You don't do it by managing bad behaviors out of them, threatening, extrinsically motivating. You do it by promoting self-discovery. It would be something like, Alex, tell me, what is it that keeps you from putting that data into the CRM on a daily basis? And you'll tell me your reason. And then I might ask you to think about it from another perspective. Well, tell me then, why do you think your company asks you to do this? Or why does that work for your colleague? Or what if you were to try this for 2 weeks and give yourself a true A-B split test? You know, there's alternatives that I might introduce to you. But ultimately, you're going to make up your own mind. I'm not going to force. My job as a consultant is never to force people to do things that they don't believe in. More often, it's to show them new experiences that help them to shape new beliefs that will cause different actions.
And when you do go in and you work and coach people, what are some of the commonalities that you see again and again across clients that, you know, for anyone listening to this podcast, they might be able to change up even just by listening, do you think?
Well, I tell you something I'm seeing a lot lately, and this is post-pandemic. Very well-intentioned managers who have teams that are burned out, and with the great resignation, they're even afraid of losing more team members and being even more burned out. What those misguided but well-intended managers are doing is they're trying to reduce the workload, and they're killing themselves, and they're cranky, and then they're not nice people. And then they expect people to stick around because look at all that I'm doing for you. I've rolled up my sleeves. I'm doing your job for you. And it's a vicious cycle. What they've forgotten is that people thrive in the workplace when they feel supported and cared about. That doesn't mean you did my work for me. They feel supported and cared about because you challenged me. You gave me opportunities for growth. You gave me feedback on my performance so that I could continually improve. You showed me the next step so that I could see something beyond this current job where I'm feeling burned out. And yeah, you took away the obstacles and the barriers. You didn't have a lot of garbage in my way. But that doesn't mean that you did the work for me. You just enabled me to do the work and to grow while I was doing it.
And that kind of leads, you know, to the next, you know, the next word that you kindly sent across, which was ennoblement, which again is an interesting sort of word to apply to, you know, some of the things that we're talking about. What in, you know, your words, does that really sort of mean to organizations?
Yeah, so ennoblement is a companion to enablement. We talk a lot, especially in the sales world, about enablement. And that is the tools and the processes to make the job easier. But ennoblement is something different, and it's often lacking. It's another one of those words that's a real word, but it might not be as familiar. More often, people are familiar with its opposite, which is ignoble. Ignoble means to make something feel or be unworthy or unimportant, dismissed. Ennobled means to make someone or something be worthy and important, to feel that way and to be raised up in that way. Well, ultimately, this is a big part of the culture in a workplace. Do I have a sense of belonging? More likely, if I have been made to feel worthy and important, if I know my work is worthy and important because it contributes to the bigger picture, the longer term vision, the team unity, the culture itself, right? Then I am going to feel entirely different about the work that I do. I'm no longer just punching the clock and building the widgets and slaving through the day. If I am worthy and important and my work matters and I'm part of something bigger than myself, maybe I'm doing exactly the same work as I was before, but it feels different. My commitment is different and my investment back into the organization is very different.
Really interesting. And I think it's something that a lot of, you know, managers and leaders often forget, especially as you mentioned in the current circumstances and environment where people are looking to move to positions where they're valued, they've got more flexibility, they are doing something that they are very, very passionate about, which when you are, you know, working in large corporate structures, isn't necessarily the case. And a lot of businesses that I know have been sort of playing a little bit of catch up compared to smaller startup type companies, where that kind of culture of enabling your people and getting the best out of them and really kind of, you know, leveling them up and making them be better along their journey is really kind of embedded into that culture. What do you think, you know, for any kind of executive or C-suite leaders who might be listening to this podcast, what do you think they could do, you know, perhaps today or tomorrow that would really sort of change some of those cultural aspects of organizations who might be a little bit, let's say, behind the times with how we sort of approach our employees?
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that even more in our third E, because at the end of the day, right, the CEO is accountable to the board and the shareholders, and there has to be a business case behind that. So I promise you, for those of you who are wondering, what do I do, that it's not just fluffy stuff. This is real, and it means business results. But the answer to your question, Alex, is that there are very specific, concrete behaviors, 30 of them, that are known to do exactly what we're talking about, to build that culture where people feel ennobled and potential is unleashed and employees are engaged. Those 30 behaviors, they come from 35 plus years of research from Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner. They're seminal researchers in the field of leadership development. And they rolled up those 30 behaviors into the 5 practices of exemplary leadership. 5 practices, 6 behaviors under each one is the structure there. But this is an evidence-based framework of leadership that prescribes these accessible, easy behaviors. If you just decide to do them more frequently, you are more effective as a leader. And let me tell you how easy they are. They're things like actively listens to diverse points of view, right? Do I truly seek those out and listen to those and take into account all the voices, because that's very, very ennobling to members of the team. In the hurry up, day to day, high pressure world that we live in, sometimes the folks at the top, they get a bit distanced from and they are looking for all the shortcuts, the efficiencies versus the effectiveness. And they, without realizing it, they fail to actively seek out those diverse points of view, and then they alienate others in the organization.
And with a lot of the points that you know, are outlined in those frameworks, and it always strikes me, I'm obviously coming from a medical background, I'm all about evidence and science behind, you know, any change or any action that we make. But it always strikes me that a lot of those tend to come from things like empathy, where, you know, if a leader is empathetic, they can put themselves into the role of another person in the organization to understand, you know, what they might be thinking and what their desires might be, but also how they're feeling. And I think that other part of emotional intelligence is obviously then a leader managing their own emotions. So if they are, let's say, frustrated, or if the board is asking them to do something which is really sort of stretching them or putting pressure on them, they're not taking that out on, you know, on their employees or how they communicate or you know, really anything in terms of their soft skills and human skills. But why do you think, when you know, there's research that sort of backs this up, that so few people really kind of appreciate the importance of a skill like empathy or emotional intelligence?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to just unbundle something first, and then I will come back to the question. The 5 practices of exemplary leaders are all behaviors that are accessible to anyone. The backbone of some of those behaviors, as you say, might be more characteristics or traits or skills that you build, like empathy. So if I'm someone who is very naturally empathetic, some of these behaviors are going to come more naturally. They're going to be easier for me. If I'm not someone who's naturally empathetic, that doesn't mean I'm off the hook. It means I might have to work a little harder to more frequently practice those very specific behaviors. But this is a big mythology about leadership, is that you either are a natural born leader or forget it, you're not really going to be a leader. And that's not true. So I say all of that because people so often misunderstand and they think that you've either got it or you don't. If you don't have it, you can get it. I want people to really hear and understand that. So why then don't people exhibit this more often? Well, think about what we measure. People become senior leaders in an organization because of their performance on hard skills. On the review, for employees, as they're moving up the ladder looking for the next opportunity, it's much more based around hard skills than soft skills. We go to school for our hard skills. We build reputations and identities around our hard skills. And then poof, one day you get to a level in your job or into a role where suddenly the soft skills are more important. And someone says to you in a review, probably, you need to work on. And it's shocking to a lot of the people that end up coming to me as a coach, because this is the first time they've gotten so far in their career. They've been incredibly successful based on these hard skills. And now out of the blue, somebody says you need to be blank, more empathetic or something along those lines. It doesn't seem fair, and maybe it's not. And it doesn't seem true, because the proof is my experiences have never included being that thing you now say I need to be. And yet I've been so successful. That's a big mental shift to have to make. And many people choose not to make it.
Well, you're absolutely spot on. And I think it always reminds me of, a fantastic book, which is Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where, if we come at things thinking of, things like empathy or leadership, like we are a child and we are accepting of kind of all the possibilities to improve. And we are kind of accepting that whatever our baseline level is, whether we are, let's say, just say a good leader or perceived as a good leader because of our either our upbringing or elements of genetics or just because of experience to that point, you can always get better. And again, if you are prepared to go through the experience of actually working on some of those skills, which we call them soft skills, but they are difficult to learn because there's no playbook. That there are elements of frameworks out there. There are ways that people can reflect, but a lot of it is, as you say, tied to people's identity, and it becomes very, very personal to actually accept, constructive feedback and then put those changes into practice. How from your experience across sales, across leadership, and working with some big organizations, how do you think that people can really start to focus down and improve any kind of soft skill that they might be wanting to work on, whether it is their communication, whether it's how they talk, whether it is things like leadership or empathy? How do you think they actually should attack that and learn that in work?
Yeah, it starts with two very uncomfortable things, humility and vulnerability. The admission that as good as you are, there's more that you need is the first step. That's humility. The vulnerability comes in from now you're afraid of being exposed for this thing that you haven't done or been, and you've got to go out and get coaching or other people's input or an awareness to be able to operate differently. And you might even have to ask people for feedback in a 360 instrument or maybe even just one-to-one. All very, very uncomfortable. And yet, just think about what you'll be modeling to other people. Right. The big benefit that you'll get is secondary. The first benefit that's going to happen is as you model this to other people, it can be a breath of fresh air, because they too are now going to be open and receptive to the feedback that you and others give them. And they're going to see a humanness in you that maybe didn't come across as much when the focus was so primarily on your hard skills, your technical skills.
And when you see people who you work with improve either their soft skills or elements of things like leadership or how they coach people to be kind of productive in their organization, what are some of the real kind of business changes that you've seen? What are some of your kind of favorite examples of people that you've worked with?
Well, I have some great stories that I could tell you. I'll tell you one of a guy named Luis who was in a leadership development program that I did. And I can tell you the story outside of confidentiality, because Luis taped an entire series of videos. He felt so passionately and wanted to share this so much. But he came into this year-long immersion leadership development course where his organization believed in him, but they weren't too happy about his recent behaviors. And when he first came into the class, he sat back like this with his arms crossed and a scowl on his face and a challenging, direct look like, I don't want to be here, and there's nothing you can do to make me feel differently. And that was interesting. But as he proceeded through that class, and as we did one-to-one coaching, and he had a 360 assessment, and he learned the five practices of exemplary leaders, plus a whole lot more, he really did focus greatly on soft skills. He especially focused on praising and recognizing and appreciating others. So I knew he was making some progress. I knew through coaching that things were going well. What he had never shared with me during that entire year was the piece I found out at their big graduation. This company hosted a graduation even with their board members attending for those 24 people who came through the course. So I was at this outdoor event in the evening, and a woman who I had never seen before rushed up to me and threw her arms around me and gave me a big hug. And I'm a hugger, but it was extremely uncomfortable because pretty soon she was crying and she was thanking me, and I had no idea what was going on. And it turned out this was Luis's wife, except they had recently, a little less than a year ago, finalized their divorce, but now they had just gotten remarried. And she believed that the work he did through that leadership development course made him a better dad, a better father. His boss, by the time the night was over, told me all about the changes he'd seen in Luis in the workplace. And over time, I heard, you know, more and more of these stories. It was transformational. And as I said, Luis himself tells all this, these stories in a video series. But that's not unusual. I mean, he encapsulates all of it, but it's not unusual to see personal as well as professional change that others can recognize and respond to, that that greatly increases the quality of relationships too. Because ultimately, leadership is a relationship.
What a fantastic example. And I think it it beautifully kind of sums up why, you know, I actually don't like calling things soft skills or hard skills, because it sort of makes it sound like that, you know, they're not related. You know, really it's kind of technical skills or things you use for work, like kind of coding or, you know, whatever your job is. And then it's actually just human skills and how we behave, you know, in our personal lives and in our work lives. And those will kind of blend together quite naturally because of how people have developed those over time. And I think it's a fantastic example to, you know, just to really sort of illustrate that point that, you know, if people are sort of sat listening to this and as you say, Deb, have that kind of fixed mindset where they think, you know, I don't need to learn, I'm fine as I am, or we're sitting, you know, with their arms crossed in one of your coaching sessions, it can actually be completely transformational for people's lives, which I think is the other really, really fantastic point. And, you know, whenever I coach any of our team internally, especially post-pandemic, where people's working lives and their home lives are so much more intertwined even than before, where people are working from home, you end up sort of coaching people around absolutely everything, because it's also sort of fitting together. What a great example. I mean, for you on your own journey, just kind of looking back, what are some of the, you know, the kind of personal revelations that you have found going through all your research into some of the science behind soft skills and you know, things like leadership and productivity?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest and the what put me on the pathway that I've been on is that there are business impacts. I worked, as I said, at a Fortune 500 company. And when I first went there, this company was always on the top of those lists about great places to work and people practices. And it was amazing, the work that we were doing and what I was a part of and how I saw it impacting people in a positive way. Well, then the company put itself on the auction block, meaning now every penny suddenly is going to be viewed differently. And they just pulled the rug out from under all of the diversity initiatives and all of the performance management work and all of the coaching and all of the support that they had given to people in so, so many ways. And I watched it like a tidal wave across the 31 markets where we worked, night and day difference from being a people-focused organization to being a profit-focused organization. Nothing else matters. We're going to kill people if that means an extra penny in profit. And it's why I founded the company that I did, People First Productivity Solutions, because I very quickly saw in the 9 months that this went on after they put themselves up for sale and the sale closed, I watched as, although technically in the short term, they might have saved a little money, in the long term, you could see how this would play out. People were resentful. They were burned out. They weren't working much at all. They were just on the clock. They didn't care. They weren't investing themselves. And long term, that profitability certainly did. You know, the company was sold, so we don't have the apples to apples, but you can see all of the predecessors to the profitability falling off. People engagement comes first. And without it, you'll never be successful in anything that you try to do in business.
Well, again, just a fantastic example of you know, why putting your people first, and it's just so important, and how people really are actually the businesses, which is the, you know, the kind of facing thing that's on the NASDAQ, or is the name above the doors. And a nice way to kind of transition to something that we ask everyone who comes onto the podcast, which is, who has sort of inspired you on your own journey? Who is your human performance hero?
Well, I'm going to talk about my mom for just a moment. I am attracted to pioneers of all sorts, and my mom certainly was one in her own right. She was a U.S. Marine, a women's Marine. She was one of the first. She was one of the first of 13 to go overseas during wartime in Korea. She was one of the first to be a recruiter, an active full-time recruiter for the U.S. Women Marines. And she was the first woman to be kicked out of the Marines for having a child out of wedlock. That's me. And so the social lessons and the leadership lessons and the courage lessons that I learned from my mom through her experiences are extremely motivating, inspiring to me.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. You must be so proud, and what a great way to wrap things up, kind of highlighting a lot of what we talked about. So that's fantastic. Deb, if anyone listening wants to find a little bit more about you or work with you or see any of the amazing work that you've done, where can they go to find out a little bit more?
Well, the websites are People First PS, stands for Productivity Solutions, peoplefirstps.com. The academy is peoplefirstpotential.com. And my email is deb.calvert@peoplefirstps. I say my email more than my LinkedIn or any other place, because I do very much enjoy one-to-one conversations. And we can pick up right where we've left off here. I like to hear people's stories, and I enjoy the conversation. So don't ever hold back, right? Go look me up on LinkedIn. Start there if you like, but then visit the websites and give me an email or a call. I'd love to chat.
Amazing. Well, Deb, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Lots and lots of great information for everybody listening, and wishing you all the best in all of your continued work into leadership soft skills and everything else to help people in any organization, you know, be the best they can be.
Well, Alex, thank you. And thank you very much for everything you're doing here on the Human Performance Podcast. I think it matters. It makes a difference.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Deb.